ஓம் நம சிவாய. டியர் லிசனர்ஸ் ஆஃப் சைவம் டாட் ஆர்க், தி நெக்ஸ்ட் ப்ரோக்ராம் இஸ் ஸ்பிரிச்சுவல் டிஸ்கோர்ஸ். இன் திஸ் யூ ஆர் அபவுட் டு லிசன் கவாய் ஹிந்து லெக்சர்ஸ். தி டைட்டில்ஸ் ஆர் எட்மாண்டன் ரிப்போர்ட் ஸ்டோரிஸ் பிரசன்டட் பை ஸ்ரீ சிவாய போதிநாத வேலாயுத சுவாமி. தேங்க்யூ. ஓம் நம சிவாய.
Good morning, everyone. Very nice ceremony this morning. We're happy to welcome three individuals into Bhakta Shishya membership in the church. Let the fresh air come in here and wake us all up. So our talk this morning starts off with a recall of our recent trip to Western Canada. Brahmacharya Sanaswamy and I, we spent 3 days in Edmonton and then 3 days in Vancouver. And the time in Edmonton corresponded with their annual temple festival called Alankara Utsavam. And Gurudev and Sanaswamy, in fact, had both been there 4 years ago at this very same time, which is when the temple had its Kumbhabhishekam. Though this temple society has existed for over 20 years, they had only had the temple in the current building for the last 4 years. So previous to that, they were in a rented hall and then later on moved to a house on the same property that the temple now sits. So it's a very interesting temple. The devotees are mostly from Sri Lanka, and we're very happy to have us there as part of the festival. And in fact, many of the older devotees personally knew Yogaswami and told us a few stories about how he used to visit their home and have lunch or visit their family's restaurants and this and that. So it's always wonderful to meet people who knew Yogaswami firsthand. The priest there, we've also known him, seems like forever, since 1972, when we met Subramanya Gurukul in Olivetti, any of you on that India Inner Search in 1972, seems like ancient history, 32 years ago, may recall him. He was one of the priests who helped conduct a very large ceremony. We had about 10 priests there, I think, in all at the ashram. He was one of those, and Gurudeva helped him and his family move to Edmonton from Singapore some 20 years ago, helped him get established. So he's been there in Edmonton. I described him in following Gurudeva's tradition of honoring the priests. I tried to find something to say about the priests always toward the beginning of any talk in a temple and get the whole group to applaud the priests, you know. Give them proper recognition. And so I said, not only was he an excellent priest, he was a loyal priest as well, meaning, you know, he stayed for over 20 years at this one temple. You know, he didn't jump here and there looking for higher salaries. You know, he was very loyal to the temple, and they appreciated that a great deal. So another way was the Edmonton experience felt like being in Olivetti was the temple itself. The temple is a traditional Ganesha Saiva temple. So in the main sanctum they have Ganesha, and in the side shrines they have Shiva, Murugan, Shakti, and Vaibhava. So all the deities are purely Saivite. In fact, they're very proud about having a traditional Saivite temple, which is very unusual in North America, because usually the temple trustees give in to the demands of various groups, and Krishna sneaks in before you know it, and then Durga's over in this corner, and Rama comes in here. Before you know it, you have a real hodgepodge of deities, a real mixture of traditions, so they don't seem to be subject to coercion or bribery. They seem to be sticking to their ideals for a staunch Sarai temple, which is very nice. And it reminded me of the temple nearest the Alavetti Ashram, which is the Kumbhalavalai Piliar Koga, which has a very similar Ganesha vibration, very strong central shrine to Ganesha. So the temple itself reminded me of Alavetti. And in Edmonton, downstairs, they have a small shrine to Gurudeva in the downstairs cultural hall, honoring his extensive work and helping establish the temple. He worked with the temple for more than 2 decades, helping them through their various challenges and issues to help the temple finally manifest in its own building. So they're honoring him with a shrine down there, which is very unusual because the temple likes to keep a certain distance from swamis. You know, it doesn't want to align itself with any one particular swami. It wants to be a vehicle where many swamis could come and talk. But anyway, they did make a shrine for Gurudeva, which is very nice, honoring his work, which was extensive. And another aspect about it that relates closely to us is that Arun Vailan is teaching the Sunday children's class, and there's a pretty good group. We met 12 of the students, which wasn't all of them. There's quite a few more who weren't able to come because of exams. We met 12, and he's teaching them very strictly from Gurudeva's teachings, a nice sight-like presentation. So, all in all, being there felt like being in Alavetti. Reminded me of that, reminded me of the experience that many of the monks had in the 1970s in Alavetti. So I nicknamed our experience, it was actually in just southern Edmonton around the temple. I nicknamed that part of Edmonton Alavetti North. Because it felt just like being there. It reminded us just as if we were back in Alavetti, with all the people and the experiences and the food and the temple and the vibration and everything. So when Sam Swami and I left Edmonton, we were definitely inspired by the experience, and in many ways it felt like we hadn't left Kualina. You know, even though we were thousands of miles away, there we were in the middle of this strong Nisai-like community, strong temple, everything, traditional food, and so forth, and it felt like we hadn't left. You know, it's just like we were still in Kualina in many ways. So one of the ways in which we were inspired when we left was the idea of making more of Yogaswami's life and teachings available in printed and computer form in the near future. You know, I look around in my library and we have certain books on Yogaswami, Machintanaya and Words of Our Master, and you know, the publication date on most of the books is 1970. Somewhere in the 1970s these books came out, and they look like they came out in the 1970s. They're old and battered and a little mildewed, and you know, it struck me that we really need some new material on Yogaswami. Simple material that can be shared, particularly with the younger group in these temples, both in the Edmonton Temple as well as in other temples and societies which have elders who know Yogaswami. You know, it's a wonderful opportunity to plug into that knowledge and encourage the elders to speak about Yogaswami in ways that they usually don't by having Yogaswami stories and teachings presented in the temple. Then they'll come to life and talk about Yogaswami and impress all the younger people that, gee, Yogaswami really lived and our elders know him, moved with him. He's a real person. And they help take advantage of, you know, maybe it's 10, 15 more years, 20 years maximum, that these elders who knew Yogaswami will still be with us. And so it's a wonderful opportunity to take advantage of their presence to impress that Yogaswami was a real person and how great and unique he was on the minds of the younger Hindus in those groups. So, having said all of that, of course I have to tell a story. So not being the greatest storyteller, I found one, which I'll read. It's a nice story. It's a long story too. It's by Susanaga Viraperuma. And it's on the web if you want to find it. So here he goes in his story. He doesn't give a date. It was a cool and peaceful morning, except for the rattling noises owing to the gentle breeze that swayed the tall and graceful palmyra trees. We walked silently through the narrow and dusty roads. The city was still asleep. Yogaswami lived in a tiny hut that had been specially constructed for him in the garden of a home in the city of Jaffna. The hut had a thatched roof and was on the whole characterized by the simplicity of a pleasant dwelling. Yogaswami appeared exactly as I had imagined him to be like. He looked very old and frail. He was of medium height and his long gray hair fell over his shoulders. When we first saw Yogaswami, he was sweeping the garden with a long broom. He slowly walked towards us and opened the gates. "I am doing a coolie's job," he said. "Why have you come to see a coolie?" Coolie is a laborer. Coolie is a worker. He chuckled with a mischievous twinkle in his eyes. I noticed that he spoke good English with an impeccable accent. As there is usually an esoteric meaning to all his statements, I interpreted his words to mean this: "I am the spiritual cleanser of human beings. Why do you want to be cleansed?" He gently beckoned us into his hut. Yogaswami sat cross-legged on a slightly elevated platform, and we sat on the floor facing him. We had not yet spoken a single word. That morning, in fact, we hardly spoke, for he did all the talking. Talking to him was unnecessary, for one had only to think of something, and he replied instantaneously. I did not have to formulate my questions into words, for Yogaswami was aware of my thoughts all the time. After we had comfortably sat on the floor, Yogaswami closed his eyes and remained motionless for nearly half an hour. He seemed to live in another dimension of his being during that time. One wondered whether the serenity of his facial expression was attributable to the joy of his inner meditation, or was he sleeping or resting? Was he trying to probe into our inner minds? My friend indicated with a nervous smile that we were really lucky to have been received by him. Yogaswami suddenly opened his eyes. Those luminous eyes brightened the darkness of the entire hut. His eyes were as mellow as they were luminous, the mellowness of compassion. I was beginning to feel hungry and tired, and thereupon Yogaswami asked, "What will you have for breakfast?" At that moment, I would have accepted anything that was offered, but I thought of idli and bananas, which were popular items of food in Jaffna. In a flash, there appeared a stranger in the hut who respectfully bowed and offered us these items of food from a tray that he was holding. A little later, my friend wished for coffee, but before he could express his request in words, the same man reappeared on the scene and served us coffee. After breakfast, Yogaswami asked us not to throw away the banana skins, which were for the cow. He spoke loudly to the cow that was grazing in the garden. The cow clumsily walked right into the hut. He fed her with the banana skins. She licked his hand gratefully and tried to sit on the floor. Yogaswami held out the last remaining banana skin to the cow and said, "Now leave us alone. Don't disturb us, Vali." That's the cow's name, Vali. "I am having some visitors." The cow nodded her head in obeisance and faithfully carried out his instructions and left the hut. After the cow had left us, Yogaswami closed his eyes again, and he seemed once more to be lost in a world of his own. I was indeed curious to know what exactly Yogaswami did on these occasions by closing his eyes. I wondered whether he was meditating. It was an apropos moment to broach the subject, but before I could ask any questions, he suddenly started speaking. "Look at those trees," said Yogaswami. "The trees are meditating. Meditation is silence. If you realize that you really know nothing, then you would truly be meditating. Such truthfulness is the right soil for silence. Silence is meditation." Yogaswami bent forward eagerly and continued, "You must be simple. You must be utterly naked in your consciousness. When you have reduced yourself to nothing, when your ego, your small self, has disappeared, When you have become nothing, then you are yourself God. The man who is nothing knows God, for God is nothing. Nothing is everything. Because I am nothing, you see, because I am a beggar, I own everything. So nothing means everything. Understand. Tell us about this state of nothingness, requested my friend with eager anticipation. Yogaswami continued, it means that you genuinely desire nothing. It means that you can honestly say that you know nothing. It also means that you are not interested in doing anything about this state of nothingness. What, I speculated, did he mean by know nothing? The state of pure being in contrast to becoming? Yogaswami, you think you know, but in fact you are ignorant. When you see that you know nothing about yourself, then you are yourself God. End of story. That's a great story. We need more stories. So, now it's my turn. This is certainly an informative story, and it shares a number of important points about Yogaswami's teachings. The most dominant point made has to do with nothingness and not knowing. In life, the normal emphasis is on acquiring knowledge. That is, replacing a lack of knowledge on a subject with knowledge, right? That's what we usually do. We try and acquire knowledge. We don't know something, we try and find out about it. For example, we purchase a new computer and know little about its operating system. Therefore, we need to read the manuals, talk to experts, and end up acquiring enough knowledge to operate the computer, right? We have replaced a lack of intellectual knowledge on the subject with intellectual knowledge. However, Yogaswami's approach is the opposite. We start with intellectual knowledge about God and strive to rid ourselves of this knowledge. When we succeed, we end up experiencing God. Why is this? It is because the intellect cannot experience God. The experience of God in His personal form and His all-pervasive consciousness lies in the superconscious or intuitive mind. And the experience of God as absolute reality is even beyond the superconscious mind. Yogaswami had a simple phrase that captures the essence of this approach to God realization, which is, it's not in books, you fool. Acquiring clear intellectual concepts of the nature of God is good, but these concepts must be eventually transcended to actually experience God. One of Chalapaswami's Mahavakyam, or great sayings, also emphasizes the same idea. In Tamil, it is Nam Ariyom, which translates as "we do not know." Again, opposite of what we usually think. We know. We do not know is the message. In Gurudeva's writings, the same idea appears in his cognizant ability aphorisms, in which he says, the intellect, strengthened with opinionated knowledge, is the only barrier to the superconscious. Gurudeva goes on to explain that a mystic generally does not talk very much, for his intuition works through reason but does not use the processes of reason. Any intuitive breakthrough will be quite reasonable, but it does not use the processes of reason. Reason takes time. Superconsciousness acts in the now. All superconscious knowing comes in a flash, out of the nowhere. Intuition is more direct than reason and far more accurate, says Gurudeva. Thus we can clearly see that the same idea is being expressed by all three gurus of our Kailasa Parampara, which is that the experience of God is only possible when we transcend the limited faculties of our intellect and the concepts it has about God and dive more deeply. Said another way, clearly the experience of next section of our talk this morning is on Yogaswami's emphasis on know thyself. and includes a short story about his disciple Markandeya Swami. Siva Yoga Swami, Gurudeva's guru, was both the consummate Siva Bhaktar and Siva Yogi, which means he was both a great devotee of Lord Shiva as well as a profound meditator. His combination of devotion and meditation is unique to the path of Saiva Siddhanta. Most Hindu traditions focus on either devotion or meditation, but not both. In Saiva Siddhanta, deep devotion to God is in fact considered a prerequisite to meditation. And meditation is considered a practice that all need to eventually take up after devotion has awakened. As we mentioned, Siva Yoga Swami was a great yogi, and he would sit for hours, even days, in deepest meditation. That would be a good story, right? He would also stress the importance of meditation to his devotees and formulated a key teaching, or Mahavakyam, great saying, to help them meditate, which is Tamo Tannai Bari, English, Know Thyself. Here are some of Yogaswami's sayings on knowing thyself. You must know the self by the self. Concentration of mind is required for this. You lack nothing. The only thing you lack is that you do not know who you are. Truth is not encompassed by books and learning. You must know yourself by yourself. There is nothing else to be known. And of course, his first Nachindanai begins with the famous line, Enna yena kari vittan yenko gurunadan. A gurunadan, referring of course to his guru, Chalapa Swami, made me to know myself. Gurudeva began taking his monks to Jaffna in 1969. Yogaswami, of course, had passed away in 1964, so we did not have the opportunity of meeting him. However, Yogaswami's disciple, Markandeya Swami, was living in a hut outside of Jaffna and would share Yogaswami's teachings with all who visited. In this way, many of our senior monks had the opportunity to visit him and listen to his explanations of Yogaswami's teachings. Markandeya Swami liked to stress the teaching that Yogaswami only gave us one work to do, and would often say, Yogaswami didn't give us 100-odd works to do, only one. Realize the self, yourself, or know thyself, or find out who you are. In Tamil, Tannai Ari. You can't find the truth in 1,000 books or by listening to people talk. You must realize the self by yourself. End of his quote. What exactly does it mean to know thyself? Satguru Siva Yoga Swami explains this beautifully in one of his published letters called Nanyar. Who am I? You are not the body. You are not the mind, nor the intellect, nor the will. You are the Atma. The Atma is eternal. This is the conclusion at which great souls have arrived from their experience. Let this truth become well impressed on your mind. This exact thought appears in the first sloka of Gurudeva's work, Dancing with Shiva. Who am I? Where did I come from? Rishis proclaim that we are not our body, mind, or emotions. We are divine souls on a wondrous journey. We come from God, live in God, and are evolving into oneness with God. We are in truth, the truth we seek. Om. Yogaswami and Gurudeva are both explaining that in the great saying, Know Thyself, self refers, of course, to the Atma, our internal spiritual nature, our immortal soul. They are also pointing out that many people think they are the body. How they look is who they are. Others identify with the emotions and memories of their mind, and still others think they are the intellect, the reasoning part of the mind, and the willpower to successfully accomplish their plans. Today we are deluged by information. Books, television, and the internet provide us with much more information than ever before available. We are in fact in technology's information age. Unfortunately, though information abounds, how much of it is teaching us we are a divine soul? Certainly only a very small amount. Most of the information in our modern world teaches us to identify with our external nature. Movies and TV teach us we are our body and emotions. And at school we are taught we are our intellect. As we know, Yogaswami's saying is that it's not in books you fool. But for today's world, we need to amplify his saying to read, it's not in books, television, movies, the internet, or computer games, you fool. Yogaswami often encouraged devotees not to simply worship the deity in the outer temple, but also to worship oneself in the inner temple. In the words of Mark Andruswami, quote, Yogaswami said, leave your relations downstairs, your will, your intellect, your senses. Those are your relations. Leave the fellows and go upstairs by yourself and find out who you are. Then you can go downstairs and be with the fellows. In conclusion, we all, of course, recognize the high spiritual attainments of Satguru Sri Yogaswami. However, it is important in thinking of Yogaswami to understand that the high spiritual attainment that he achieved is also the potential of each and every one of us. The spiritual destiny of each soul to be reached at some point in this or future life. Be re-inspired by Yogaswami's great spiritual attainments to devote more time to your own spiritual practices. A verse from the Maitri Upanishad beautifully summarizes the path to self-realization. By austerity, goodness is obtained. From goodness, understanding is reached. From understanding, the self is obtained, and he who obtains the self is freed from the cycle of birth and death. And lastly, remember that Satguru Sri Yogaswami only gave us one work to do. Tannai ai, know thyself. Thank you very much. Interesting, the last page is blank. Like emphasizing God is nothing, you know nothing. One page.